fear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Hello and welcome to the MSC Podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster, will look back on yesterday's 1-0 defeat at St Johnstone. We'll look ahead to the last game of the season, a home fixture against Livingston. We'll discuss David Turnbull scooping the Young Player of the Year at the Football Writers Award, and maybe a wee bit about the award they missed out on. And we'll see what else takes a fancy over the next half an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
How do.
Cheers.
Jay, as always, we'll start with you. And yesterday's game at St Johnstone, albeit none of us were actually at the game yesterday, I managed to catch the vast majority of it as it happened and regretted the fact that I had access to a stream, to be perfectly honest with you. A below par showing, a disappointing result in terms of meaning that means we miss out on seventh place as well. Albeit I'm not 100% sure how much that actually matters to, from a supporter's point of view anyway. But to suffer a first defeat in the bottom six fixtures, a disappointment of course. And eighth place though, I would say that if you'd spoken to me in January, I would have certainly taken eighth place and a very comfortable season.
Yeah, I think that about sums it up. I mean, it might have been worse maybe getting somebody on who was actually there. No, I mean, that's it. I mean, personally, you know, a combination of finances, plans later on, and to be honest, you know, maybe feeling that the season was, you know, winding down and things like that led to me the Rutherglen game instead for £6 rather than whatever it was to get to McDermott Park. But no, I think you're right. You know, I think the players, in fact, I don't want to say winding down, and I certainly don't want to be critical about it because I've just, you know, said that I perhaps didn't put as much effort into going as I could have if I'd really wanted to. So I'm not going to start criticising the players, but it does feel a little bit since the split that maybe we have taken the foot off the gas a little bit, which is natural, but also is a little bit disappointing, particularly because, you know, at the split there was so much made at the club about how, no, we are not the kind of team that just, you know, that's it, the season's over, we will keep going, we've got our sights set in seventh. But when you look at draws against, you know, Accies and St Mirren, when you look at having to grind out an injury time, you know, goal to win the game against a Dundee side who've scored three goals against you despite being far and away the worst side in the league. And then, you know, by all accounts, a pretty disappointing game at McDermott Park. And yeah, I know what you're saying, seventh place in the grand scheme of things isn't a great deal to write home about, but for as long as you are in a league competition and for as long as you have something to play for, I would like to think that that's exactly what you're doing. So to kind of sink without a trace and to kind of just surrender that seventh place spot as easy as we seemed to do yesterday is disappointing, because I think that our form since Hogmanay would have merited it. I think our form since Hogmanay would have merited, you know, being in the top six, to be honest, particularly when you talk to Hearts fans and how poor they've been. But it is what it is. You know, the season is petering out and we've kind of got one game left to maybe try and turn it on before the summer.
Buster, there was a few selection headaches for Stephen Robinson ahead of yesterday's game, and that possibly led to the inclusion of Jake Hastie on the bench. We all know the background to that one and we won't go into that much more than we need to. But Jake Hastie then comes on towards the end of the game. The fans, or a section of the supporters, certainly let Hastie know what they feel of him and what they feel about his move to Rangers. It seems a bit of a strange move just bringing him on in the first place. I think it's stranger that he actually came on for the game than it was that the fans booed him.
I agree there, yeah. Especially when, you know, at the time I was reading Jamie Semple was still available to come on. So, you know, you think you'd maybe went with him instead. As you say, as we all know, and we all have our own feelings on Jake Hastie's move. Jake Hastie's ability as well, I get a lot of us have different opinions on that. You know, he's big, strong, fast. Maybe the only thing I can think of, Robinson was thinking that, you know, he's maybe going to want to play football, basically, and he's maybe going to be give us a spark and get us back into the game. But, you know, as you say, there was a few choice words even on Twitter as it came on. I was reading it. So I don't think it was the brightest move. And I would certainly rather have seen Semp on there again, as would the majority of the posts on Twitter that I read. Whether or not you're into booing guys who are essentially still in your team, I can't say that I would not have taken part. But no, I mean that generally. I don't know whether or not I would have.
No, I agree. I agree. I know exactly what you're saying.
A couple of pints, I would definitely have. You know, if I'd went sober, I'd maybe not have. I'd maybe just have went, ah, well, he deserves what he gets. But, you know, 5 pints and I'd have probably been the first one to boo.
No, but, I mean, I was just going to say, you're right. I mean, that's the thing. I think on Twitter, I don't know, like, there's been a lot of, even for Motherwell fans, sort of saying about how, oh, they're embarrassed. You know, they're embarrassed to be Motherwell fans and, you know, they're ashamed. It's
Get that to fuck. That's a lot of shite.
We need to stop trying. Like, there are serious problems in football now in terms of, you know, folk chucking things and, you know, the sectarian singing that we heard from about like 40,000 fans earlier today. But we need to stop trying to sanitise absolutely everything in football. You know, you've got a player. I'm not going to condone dishing out abuse to a 19-year-old who's made a career decision, and his decision itself is, you know, nobody else's business but his own. But to, you know, assume that someone who is still your player, who has signed for a league rival that is universally detested by every other team in the league, if you think that nobody's going to boo or give him grief, you know, what sport have you been watching for the last, you know, whatever, 10, 15, 20 years? It's a part and parcel of football. And I think, you know, the fact that he even made the Sun and the Daily Record and stuff like that is absolutely nonsense.
Yeah, we're interested to see whether they give a lot of attention to songs about the Lisbon Lions and such like at Ibrox today. And this isn't a what about race situation. It's just generally, it got a ridiculous amount of coverage for something so minuscule. It's fans,
it's because he's going to Rangers. Team.
Yes, of course it is. But the thing is, there's a bigger picture there as well. Look, I don't think there's ever really been many situations where a player signs a pre-contract deal with a rival and then gets treated with anything more than a bit of disdain. So what exactly were they expecting here?
The you know, it can be compared probably to the Jordan Jones situation as well. When, you know, he signed for Rangers, the Kilmarnock fans that I know and see online, again, were up in arms telling him he can get himself to France, all that sort of stuff. But don't get me wrong, Jordan Jones put in a performance against Rangers and got them a goal. And whether or not it's deliberate, Jake Hastie has been pretty rubbish ever since since he didn't sign a contract. You know, he gave it all the, this is where I'm at, I want to play football, this is what I want to do, you know. And you know, when it didn't come about, fair enough, again, it's his decision. I understand it's a massive financial decision as well, but his performance has dipped. And I think that's where the problem lies. Basically, if Jake Hastie had been rattling them away, you know, or putting in the performances, I don't think there'd have been any real issue about it. I mind Scott McDonald basically scoring when he signed for Celtic. He kept scoring goals, and although it was, you know, a bad situation to be in, nobody really gave him much grief because he was still scoring the goals, and effectively, I think he kept us up that year as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely spot on. Just on the Hasty situation, and I promised last week that we wouldn't discuss him or his move any further than last week's podcast, but the manager came in for a bit of flack for bringing him on in the first place yesterday. Jay, after it, Stephen Robinson said, I'm just bringing on guys that will help me win a game. Obviously, he's bemoaned finances through the week, and I'm going to go into that a wee bit later on. The manager's well within his rights to play anybody within his squad if they're available to him. I don't think it's particularly fair to claim the manager hung a player out to dry. He was just trying to get his team back into a football match.
Yeah. I mean, I can kind of see both sides, to be honest with you. You know, I kind of, taking what Buster was saying there, Jake Hastie for me has been, you know, completely below par since this kind of all hit the newspapers. Now, we spoke at length in the previous podcast about whether that was because the speculation was getting to him or whether he had just had a purple patch and then we were now witnessing the real Jake Hasty. But regardless, you know, the idea that you were throwing on a player to try and win the game, he's not showing the form that he's going to come on and win the game. I, you know, can see both sides. Stephen Robinson's got a job to do. And let's be honest, if he was to make, you know, perhaps another change, you look at the other guys who were on the bench there, Hartley, Main, Donnelly. You know, I know that Buster mentioned Semple, but of course, if you brought on Semple instead of Hasty, would you then have had to bring Hasty on, you know, later on? The other guys, other than, you know, Johnson, Hasty and Semple that got on, none of those are really going to get the fans on side. You know, if you took off, I suppose there's an argument you could take off Scott and throw on Main. He's done it in the last couple of games. But Main has came under a lot of pelters, you know, the last couple of weeks. I thought when he, you know, made a sub-appearance last week, I thought he just looked completely uninterested. Peter Hartley just seems to be there to warm a space in the bench. And Liam Donnelly hardly has a fan club at Fir Park. So I can see Stephen Robinson's kind of point from that point of view. He's in a kind of a lose-lose situation because of the players he's got available, if he wants to win the game, then perhaps Jake Hasty is the best option at that point. And allied to that, none of the other guys are really going to endear him to the fans anyway. However, you know, we're talking about a player who, you know, who hasn't just signed a deal for a league rival, but, you know, kind of, for me, it was dragged on far more than it had to be. You know, I don't think it was particularly well handled from the player's point of view. You know, he's not done much for Motherwell. You know, in terms of form and things like that, since the speculation started hitting the papers, and he was dropped for a few weeks immediately after he'd signed, as though that was it, we would never see him again. So I think when you factor all that in, I can absolutely see why, you know, eyebrows are raised and questions are asked. Why should Jake Hasty be on the bench? Why should he be getting a game? At the end of the day, he's no longer our player. His Instagram story today, you know, makes that clear. You know, at Ibrox, it's his own free time, he can do what he wants, but I think, you know, there's an element of this is where I'm going to be playing next year. He is, you know, not going to be as committed. Why should he be? Is he going to go in for 50-50s? Does he really care? You know, if Motherwell finish 7th or 8th, it'd be slightly different if you were in a cup final or something like that, and he's got the chance to leave the club with a winner's medal. But I just don't see it. I don't see you know, where the positives are in bringing Jake Hasty on in that game. And I don't see any positives for Jake Hasty at all. It's all negatives. The only things that can come from Jake Hasty being on a football pitch yesterday, be it, you know, having a terrible performance and Rangers fans start to question whether they should be signing him, whether it's getting abuse from the fans, whether it's picking up an injury that could obviously hamper his pre-season at Ibrox, you know, it's all negatives. So for me, questions should be asked. If the reason is purely that it was a footballing decision and, you know, Hasty had been fantastic in training all week and the belief was he could go on and change the game, fair enough. But for me, the minute he signed for Rangers, we should have been, you know, looking at what else we could be doing and who else we could be playing, because Robinson's got a massive, massive job in the summer in terms of rebuilding. And if there's the opportunity to maybe give someone else a chance or maybe see if something else works at the expense of bringing Jake Hasty on for 15 minutes, then I'd be all for it.
Now, Buster, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate and I quite enjoyed Jay managed to put a very good case there. In terms of criticising the manager, and earlier on in the season I get accused of been overly critical of the manager. He did say a couple of weeks ago that he wasn't going to entertain players that didn't want to be at the football club.
He did. And again, as you say, it's a very difficult one because I wouldn't have him in the squad. Although having said that, as I think I said a couple of weeks ago, there's six or seven players in our first team who are undecided. And from what Robinson said since then, there's two or three of them who have told him they don't want to be here. So how far, you know, for example, this week was the only week we had maybe something to play for. When I say something, it's obviously a league position. So now that we're sort of done and dusted, do these guys, whoever they are, be it Curtis Main, you know, Hasty already, as we says, maybe Chrissy Cadden, you know, these sort of guys, next week, do we just bomb them out and, you know, go with the under-18s, you know, something like that. I wouldn't be against it, to be honest with you. But it's maybe been a case that Robinson has been, again, as was said, backed into a corner with the amount of players that he's... When he's seen he's got problems with, or, you know, issues picking a squad, whatever, it could be that, although he said that, he's had to go back in his word because certain guys, maybe too many of them, have said, we're not going to be here next season.
All I would say on that is I think every player needs to be taken, you know, you can't just have a blanket thing where you say, right, if you sign a pre-contract, you're never playing for the club again. Because, you know, if Chrissy Cadden, for example, had signed
of
a
course,
pre-contract to a team down south, then you would still want to see him, you would still expect him to play, etc. Every case is different. What I would say is in terms of, you know, there very well might be guys who are out of contract in the summer. Now, as far as I'm aware, you know, Jake Hasty is the only one that's agreed terms with another club, and is, you know, I think, I don't know if it's a rule or whether it's just a gentleman's agreement, but as far as I'm aware, you know, clubs need to notify a club if they're going to offer a pre-contract. That was the whole stuff about, you know, Gary Holt, you know, spitting the dummy over Declan Gallagher regarding, you know, claims that we hadn't notified them. At the end of the day, the club should be aware of who's agreed deals elsewhere. Now, if there are guys who have agreed deals elsewhere and haven't been announced, that's fair enough. If it's simply the case that there are a couple of players in the Motherwell squad who have said to Stephen Robinson, look, I would like to move on in the summer, I still don't put that in the same bracket as Jake Hasty, because if you have player A who has decided that he's going to move on and wants to leave Motherwell but hasn't got a club yet or hasn't actually agreed terms yet, he's still there to put himself in the shop window. He's still looking for a move. He's still looking to impress. He can still go on a park for 90 minutes, half an hour, 15 minutes, whatever it is, and has a reason to be there. He has, you know, a chance to impress scouts or whoever it is that may be watching him. Jake Hasty, as I've said earlier, there are no positives for him playing for Motherwell at the moment. It's all negatives. Jake Hasty isn't playing for a move anywhere. Jake Hasty is moving. It's done. So that's why I don't think that, you know, again, it's all speculation. We don't know who we're talking about. But if there are players who missed out yesterday because they've told Stephen Robinson they want to move on but don't have clubs yet, I still think there's an argument for those guys to be playing because they have something to play for. They need to put themselves in the shop window. It might even be that they've kind of agreed verbally to join a team and just, you know, they might be playing for terms. They might be playing for a slightly increased wage or whatever it is. Jake Hasty is the one player in our squad that isn't playing for anything.
To be fair, you're actually 100% right there, but all I would say on that is since the Hamilton game, I've thought our players have basically been on holiday mode anyway. They might not have been 100% dialed out, but, you know, there's the defence 100% has not been there. And again, Dundee, despite the fact that we won 4-3, there were points of that game where I felt, for example, when Dundee scored, it was as if we suddenly went, ugh, we probably need to score now. And they turned it on a wee bit and scored. Whereas, as I say, you know, although I wasn't there yesterday, for what I was reading, people weren't pleased. And again, as I say, I feel as if they've been on holiday mode for the last couple of weeks at least anyway.
Aye.
So we talked about right at the start of the podcast that was all obviously confirmed that we've missed out in seventh place. Given that Stephen Robinson has talked about financial restrictions causing real headaches and real frustrations for him, how significant was yesterday's defeat, Jay?
I don't think it's significant in the grand scheme of things. Actually, can you repeat that? You pure broke up. Can we do that again? I kind of misheard the start of that.
No problem.
I just got you saying about how significant the defeat was. So, but I don't know.
Cool. So at the start of the podcast, Jay, we discussed the fact that Stephen Robinson has bemoaned finances and cited that as a source of frustration that perhaps he's not able to compete with even teams around a similar stature to ourselves. So with that been said, how significant was yesterday's defeat?
Well, I mean, I think that in terms of even just a very literal kind of looking at it. You know, it's significant in that we've probably done ourselves out of whatever it is. I know it's a fairly minuscule amount of money in the grand scheme of things when you talk about some of the figures that are dished about, but it's probably still a reasonable sum for a club of our size. So even missing out, you know, one place could have been, you know, maybe a young player's wage or something along those lines. But I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it is, you know, an example of perhaps being brought back down to earth a little bit. You know, you said yourself at the start of the podcast, the idea that eighth is still a good place to be when you know, it's no secret now that our finances tend to dictate that we're essentially budgeting for around 10th place. We're essentially budgeting to avoid relegation. So I think in terms of how significant the defeat was yesterday, I think it maybe is just a reminder that, you know, as good as this year has been so far, and as close as we possibly might have been to the top six had we turned it on a little bit earlier, and we are still a side that even eighth position is, I'm not going to use the phrase punching above your weight because I hate it, but we have, you know, achieved slightly better than would have been expected. So I think, you know, again, it's twofold. I think on the one hand, the higher up the division you are, the more money you're going to generate, even if it is just small incremental steps. So that might have been a, you know, a little bonus for Stephen Robinson. But at the end of the day, as much as, you know, Robinson reminds us that that's the case, you know, we all know that. We're a fan-owned club. We all know that's the situation. I think we all recognise that we have done well this season to finish eighth, particularly when you take into consideration how things were going up to Christmas. So I wouldn't, you know, lose too much sleep over the defeat itself, but I think that it does show us that perhaps we are still a little bit away just overall from sides, you know, like St Johnstone and above.
And just finally on the St Johnstone game, Basta, a terrible bit of refereeing prior to the St Johnstone first goal. Aribi has a shot cleared off the line by the hand of Scott Tanzer. Tanzer eventually opens the scoring from the penalty spot later on, albeit their penalty, absolutely no arguments there. Charles Dunn gets caught on the wrong side, takes Chris Kane down. It's a stonewall penalty. But these small margins, they can be significant. And that was the referee yesterday's first top-flight match. I don't think they'll be rushing to give him another one anytime soon. But saying that, he possibly has ticked some of the boxes for being a Scottish football referee.
Well, again, I wasn't there. I didn't see it. Well, I didn't see it live, obviously, and I didn't see it as it happened. But the handball did look pretty blatant. There's a couple of angles being shown, and it does look pretty shocking, to be honest with you. I've only seen one angle of their penalty, and I was a bit dubious of that and all, to be fair. But, you know, if you've seen it a bit clearer than me, then fair enough. But as for the referee, I did see a few people moaning about his performance, but you know, unfortunately, that this is the week that absolutely none of us chose to go. It's rare that we all don't go, but this week none of us have went, so I can't even comment on the rest performance. But blatant handball, I don't think it'd be an excuse to say that we would have went on to win the game or even do better than we did. But it did look blatant, to be fair.
Yeah, a poor decision. Can we remember what the referee's name was?
It was two first names, but I can't remember what they were now.
Steve Dave.
Absolutely was not Steve Dave.
I don't know, Dave.
There we go. Colin Stephen was the referee yesterday. Assisted by Steve Dave. Anyway, there was better results last night, and David Turnbull scooped the Football Writers Young Player of the Year award after being absolutely robbed of the PFA Player of the Year award 6 days previously. We do have a segment of the podcast reserved for David Turnbull, an absolute a shoe-in for the award. There was no one else that should have ever been considered. The fact that Ryan Kent had won the PFA Player of the Year award a week prior just kind of shows how fucking thick some footballers are. But coming from people that watch more of the game and have a broader perspective of the game, Jay, this is a as a fitting tribute to David Turnbull, very well deserved, and he just keeps on getting better as well. So we can only hope that the only way is up.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think I'm right in saying that the PFA Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year, it's like, you know, across Scotland, all the players vote. So I think, I mean, yeah, I mean, I agree, a lot of football players are thick, but I think it's also, you know, you're talking about guys who are be playing, you know, while David Turnbull's playing for Motherwell, you know, there's guys at Montrose, Arbroath, East Fife, whoever it is, playing on Saturday, and probably end up just seeing more of Ryan Kent on Scots Sport, or sports scene and on the telly, because it's Rangers.
The fact is that a lot of them will be Rangers and Celtic supporters.
Well, aye, that as well, but I mean, I'm not making excuses for it, but I mean, it was a laughable decision either way, but you're right, I mean, I think that the football writers, I'm not sure I would describe it as a shoo-in, because this is Scotland and we're talking about journalists, so there is still, you know, you say there about, yeah, and many of them are Rangers Celtic fans, well, the same applies to journalists in Scotland, but no, it should have been you know, there's nothing left to be said about them. Apparently in the coming weeks, or sorry, the next week, we're going to learn who the next Scotland manager is, and it's getting to the point where maybe a month ago I might have said that I would like to see him in the squad. I would think that it would be a promising move, but it's getting to the point now where I think he has to be. You know, you've got Sports Scene referring him as, you know, Michael Ballack actually in their graphics. You've got, you know, the likes of Stephen Thompson and Michael Stewart talking about how he is far and away the best young player in Scotland. And now you've got the recognition for it. So it would just be this kind of icing on the cake for, you know, a phenomenal season, having already played for the under-21s earlier in the earlier in the season, if he was to make the full squad. And see, to be honest, see, when you look at some of the, you know, the likes of somebody like John McGinn, who was playing for Hibs in the Championship when he got into the Scotland side, and you look at some of the other young players who have been in there, you know, at times, there's absolutely no reason why David Turnbull shouldn't be in that squad. So it'll be interesting to see who the Scotland manager is, but I don't think there should be any eyebrows raised if he's in the squad, because he is that good and his rise just continues and continues. And I'm already, you know, I know this season isn't out yet, but it kind of feels as though it's petering out a little bit. Already counting down the days to the start of the next season, just so I can see David Turnbull again in a bit more competitive football.
And Bastille, he won 5 awards at the Motherwell Player of the Year and awards night. He's now won this award, but he's still got the big one to come in terms of winning the podcast Young Player of the Year as well.
That's true. As you said about the you know, the players player or whatever it would be called, I watched Ryan Kent today, and you know, maybe he was having just a bad day, but he's never ever really stood out. Yeah, I've seen him have a couple of good games, but he's, David Turnbull's on a different level for that boy, in my opinion. And I know if any Rangers fan had heard that, they would, you know, their head would explode, because everybody seems to think that wee Ryan Kent guy's great. I watched him the day and he was very, very mediocre. Made too many wee daft mistakes making 5-yard passes and stuff like that. He should have slipped in Scott Arfield about 3 or 4 times, and he played either a shite pass or didn't he pass it to him. David Turnbull,
I was just going to say, in a game that Christopher Ayer and Edward, who Celtic fans have been like bombarding every Twitter with David Turnbull saying should have been nominated, were two of the worst players I've seen in fucking months.
Well, again, they didn't get nominated, so we'll leave them out, because they are dog shite too. You've started me. That Edward plays one game which is phenomenal, and every 6 other than that he is complete dog shite. And Ayer is 6'9". You know, he's a big, stupid centre-half. If you put the ball at his feet, there's a mistake in him fucking 9 times out of 10. He's lucky that he plays with Celtic, basically. But anyway, David Turnbull's got mere class in his big toe in the 3 they put together. And it was, I was kind of steaming when I heard that he'd won. When I heard that David Turnbull didn't win that award. But, you know, when I sobered up and realised who had won it, I was shocked, to be fair. I honestly thought the boy Ferguson at Aberdeen would be the only person who would get anywhere near him, because he looks like a good player, and again, he's one that people are constantly talking up as well. But do you know what? If he's not winning these awards, well, he is winning the rest of them except for that one, so that's a bit of a null point. I was going to say that if he's not winning them, it maybe keeps him on our books a bit longer, but you know. As Jay says, I just can't wait to see him again.
You tried to pure worm your way out of that. That was horrible.
Fuck off. I was on the way anyway before he started.
The last Motherwell player that won it, Jay, was James McFadden, and we've started to make slight comparisons to the emergence of these guys coming through. You've kind of seen the progression, though, and the hype will just build and build and build. There was a absolute nothing story in the press today that he would eventually move on, and it was just the most. It was so simplistic in its form. It was a non-story basically. But awards like this will obviously garner attention for the player. It'll only inflate his value. And he seems to be a guy that is completely able and capable of dealing with the attention that comes with the praise and the accolades that are coming his way right now.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, as I said a couple of weeks ago, I think David Turnbull will turn out better than McFadden. I genuinely believe that. But regardless, in terms of the here and now, of course, the speculation, the awards. I mean, when Buster said there about, you know, not winning that particular award that maybe keeps him at the club a wee bit longer. You know, we're a fan-owned club. David Turnbull's came through. It's great to see him. And yes, you want him to be at the club as long as you can realistically keep him. But every time he's on Sports Scene being called Michael Ballack, every time he's picking up awards, you know, the more David Turnbull exposure that we can get, the better. Because then it means that when he does move on, we can properly coin it in rather than, you know, the minuscule fees that we've perhaps received in the past. So I'm all for folk absolutely talking up David Turnbull. And you're right, I think the kind of the speculation and stuff like that, he seems, I don't want to say the anti-Jake Hasty, because that's maybe, you know, starting to get a little bit better. But I think, you know, when you kind of compare the two, I think it's very, very clear that David Turnbull is miles ahead in terms of maturity. Just the way that he talks about, you know, even speculation, the game itself, I think he's got a good head in his shoulders, and I think even just the way he plays football, you know, the way he plays football shows that he can deal with anything off the park as well. I think he's just got that kind of swagger and that ability that I think that you wouldn't, you know, expect him to be kind of overwhelmed by speculation and stuff like that. But we do need to brace ourselves for it. I think during the summer, you will no doubt hear plenty linking them, probably with both Rangers and Celtic. That will be an absolute stick on. Just that's the way the media up here works, unfortunately. But for now, I think we said, you know, a couple of weeks ago, for now he's our player, and it's important to enjoy it, because it won't last. We all know he will move on. The question is for how much. And at the moment, you know, that value just increases and increases and increases. And if my kind of hopes and slight expectations are realised, and he does get an international call-up for the games in June and perhaps gets on for a cap, then that value continues to increase. So, you know, it's all good as far as I'm concerned. I completely understand the argument, the fact that, well, keep player A off the radar because it means nobody will come and take them. But we're a selling club, but that's the reality of the situation. The more exposure these guys can get, the more we can cash in when they eventually go. But for now, he's just different gravy. And as I said earlier, it's getting to the point where I think every Motherwell fan is practically counting down the days just to the next time they can see David Turnbull on a football pitch.
And that takes us on. We talked about speculation over the summer. There's going to be a lot of that, and there's a lot of it just now in regards to contracts that haven't been signed. Thinking off the top of my head, the two big ones I would say are Chris Cadden and Carroll McHugh, that you would believe there's still a chance that will remain at the football club. Gaboli Aribe, Tom Aldred, even at Alex Rodriguez-Gorin, they seem for all the world that they will be playing a trade somewhere away from Fir Park next season. It's a difficult time. There's no getting away from that, is there? And Buster, the challenge for the manager is kind of showing these guys that they've got a future at Fir Park and they will be able to move on to bigger things than what's on the table at this moment in time.
I think that's how it's going to work, basically, you know. Regardless of who it is, we don't really seem to hand out contracts any longer than 2 years. So every year, basically, there's going to be a rotation of players who are coming to the end of that contract, unless, you know, they're one of the youngsters. I think Alan Campbell got a 3.5-year contract the last time he signed one. But see, it's going to be like that every year. I think there's going to be big turnovers every year. I think there's also half the league like that as well. So I think it's going to be the way it is from now on. But in regards to who we've got coming and going, or sorry, who's coming in, oh sorry, going and staying, I couldn't even tell you. It's one of those things where you hear the players say one thing, you know, and their agent's in your ear maybe, or, you know, they've got offers here and there. So, yeah, and again, you know, it's fair play to these guys, but it's something that I don't even really bother with thinking about how it can go. I just wait until it happens, really. So I could not tell you. I'd love to see Chris Cadden stay. I know that sort of screws up his compensation that we've been sort of not relying on, but we've been expecting for maybe the last 3 years. So depending on, I'd like to see him maybe sign for another year or two years actually, so that we can maybe get a year out of him and then sell him. But the rest of them, they've all got their place in the team, I think. But it depends on what we can offer, how much they're looking for, how much we can offer, and whether or not it suits them, basically.
Yeah, Jay, another guy I missed out there was Curtis Main, I guess. Another player that has been absolutely on the periphery for weeks now. He just doesn't seem to be in the manager's plans. I'm trying to think of any other ones that I would have any inkling that they would stay on, but I'm struggling to find them. I would say that Cadden and McHugh are possibly the only two that I could see realistically signing extensions to their stay at Fir Park.
Yeah, you're probably right. Even McHugh, I'm not sure. I think there's arguments for even both of those players, you know, that they could move on. The main one's, you know, an interesting one because, you know, I've been quite content with the way that he was playing as a lone striker. Wasn't scoring goals, and it was obvious it's maybe not his ideal position, but I thought he did it well and actually played a big part in, you know, allowing the other guys to get in the score sheet and kind of running defenders ragged. But he certainly has not done enough to take a step up when he leaves Motherwell. So the idea that both Hearts and Aberdeen are interested absolutely baffles me. But I actually look at this kind of, I know that it always gets sold as a negative, and I can completely understand why you're losing half your squad and a rebuilding job is seen as this big kind of daunting thing. You even just need to look at the way that the BBC Twitter kind of shared Stephen Robinson's comments about losing players with the tagline, you know, half his team are looking elsewhere, and it's kind of sold as this big negative. I see it as a great opportunity, assuming we're going to continue to try and play the way we've been playing. This time last summer, we were not only strengthening the bench, but we were continuing to strengthen from the point of view that we wanted to play 3-5-2 and launch the ball long. If this summer we have a chance to get rid of a good number of players who were, you know, brought in or are used to playing that way and can try and at least replace them with players who can play in the way that we're playing now, you know, wingers, fast attacking football, maybe actually look for a lone striker. I'm not suggesting it's easy. I'm not suggesting you just kind of put together a shopping list and go out and do it. There's a lot of hard work in terms of recruitment. There's a lot of competition for players out there, and we're going to have to be on our game. We're going to have to strike it lucky at times. But I think it's a good opportunity because we've spent the, you know, as good as this year has been so far, most Motherwell fans have spent a good part of this year absolutely slating how poor the recruitment was last summer, how we shouldn't have been going for the 12-18 nonsense, how we were bringing in too many guys who were just there to be physical and play the long ball. And now we have an opportunity to not quite start from scratch, but at least we're not trying to, you know, move loads of players on because they're already going to go. So I see it as a positive, and it's something to be optimistic about because hopefully the guys that we're looking to, be, you know, bring in are hopefully going to fit the mould of what we're now looking for. And I think we're perhaps seeing that. Declan Gallagher is a big, you know, a big guy, big centre-half, but he's also a good football player. A lot of people don't realise how good Declan Gallagher can be with the ball at his feet. And then you've got Liam Polworth, who is a creative, you know, I think he's got a number of assists for Inverness. So you know, I think it's something to be positive about. I see it as a great opportunity for us to hopefully build a squad that is actually, you know, is capable of playing the football that we've been playing so far this year, rather than being stuck with one that wants to play 3-5-2 hoofball.
Yeah, it'll certainly be interesting to see what develops over the next couple of weeks or so. We'll obviously get a conclusion to most of these situations. I don't see them dragging on. We've already done some business ahead of next season before this season has even finished. So we're ahead of the game in that regard, although there certainly seems to be some frustration from the manager regarding how loose the communication is at times. Players can obviously just go about talking to other teams at will, and they've obviously got agents in their ear encouraging them to do so, and obviously doing so on their behalf as well. So it's a real challenge for a manager, and it must really challenge trust issues as well, or create trust issues even, just because if people are going to naturally go look for better things, we all do it in our own line of work as well. We're always aspiring to earn more and to have better opportunities. So players are well within their rights to do the same. It can just be quite frustrating to watch on as a fan when that happens, I guess. I was a wee bit short in terms of content for this week when I was drawing up the schedule. So we took to Twitter and asked for any points that people would like to hear brought up. And we've got an interesting one on the goalkeeping situation. Now, Buster, I'll start with yourself in this one. Mark Gillespie has come into the team after a really, really unfortunate injury to Trevor Carson, and he's done absolutely brilliantly. He's been superb through the second half of the season. It's a testimony to him that we've not missed Trevor Carson, who was obviously Northern Ireland's number one choice before his injury. We knew when Gillespie came in, we expected him to be first choice. Now he's got the gloves. Trevor Carson is moving back towards fitness. Looks like he'll be ready to go. It was actually touted to be ready to go before the end of this season. If he's not, he'll certainly be ready for the summer months and the Betfred games. I'm not sure we've got room for two goalkeepers of that calibre. I don't know if the wage structure will allow two goalkeepers of that calibre. Sorry. Where do we go from here? For me, the position is Gillespie's to lose. He's come in. I don't think he's put a foot wrong since he came into the team. But on the other hand, you've got Trevor Carson, who was absolutely phenomenal for us in his first season and a half at the club.
Yep, I think you're right there. I think, as you says, the position is Carson's. The position is Gillespie's to lose. There's a few things which will probably dictate how it goes. I think that, as you says, the finances for a start, whether or not the club want to have two players who we would assume would be on first team player wages. You know, you could. We were talking a couple of weeks ago about this in one of the stands where I think it was in Hamilton actually, and you know somebody was suggesting, you know, you give your goalie three quarters of the goalkeeper wage budget and you have two youngsters on the bench. Whether or not that's the right way forward, I don't know. But right now, I imagine we'll have two players on decent wages. So it depends on how long either of them have got left in their contract. Because surely, how long did Carson sign for? He must be due up. Surely, if not, it must be the end of next season. And again, Gillespie, just going by our sort of 2-3 year sort of thing that we do, he must be sort of similar as well. So I honestly think that if Trevor Carson is at the level he was at, you know, he'd be the better choice. But would either of them attract any interest for us to punt them? And again, there's the fact that we owe what is quoted to be 40% sell-on fee of Trevor Carson as well. So two of them are very, very capable goalkeepers. You know, on top of their game, I think everybody would have to say they would take Carson. Carson's been out for a long while, though. Can he get back to that level? you know, how bad or how badly did his DVT injury affect him? You know, I don't know anything about that, so I don't know what it is, how it affects somebody's movement, how it affects whatever part of their body. I believe it was a shoulder, how it would affect his shoulder. So, you know, you've got to take all these things into consideration, and I think the main thing it will come down to is if there's any interest in any of these goalkeepers over the summer, we'll probably ask for a semi-decent offer and let one of them go.
I think there's a lot of questions over, you know, the interest has to be there in the first place. But in terms of if you're looking, I don't think there's any doubt we're going to have to look to move one of them on. We just can't. We're a fan-owned club. You know, as we said earlier, finances are tight. You know, that first team wage for a goalkeeper could be, you know, the lone striker or, you know, a winger or whatever it is. So I think one of them will, at least moves will be made to try and get them out the door in the summer. Whether someone wants to come in and take them is a completely different thing. Having weighed it up, just while Buster was talking there, I think from both, you know, there's a lot of questions over Trevor Carson, as Buster just said there. How is he going to return? You know, it's a serious illness he's had. And it's, you know, obviously in an area that is very important to him as a goalkeeper. Is he going to come back even close to the ability he had? That's not just a question for us, though. That's a question for any team that's going to come and take him. He's 31 years old. How many teams are going to look at Trevor Carson and say, yeah, he was good, but how do we know this DVT hasn't had an impact? How do we know that it, you know, hasn't ruined his career? He's already in his 30s. So from a business sense, I think it would need to be Mark Gillespie that the club are looking to move on in the summer. He's a goalkeeper who has been tremendous since Carson came in. He's 27, so he's a couple of years younger. And we have probably sold Motherwell to him as a player the same way as we do. Not that we wouldn't with Carson, but Carson's in a completely different situation now after his injury. But Gillespie would have probably been brought here thinking he was going to be number one with the intention of then moving him on to maybe a higher level club down in England than Walsall. So I think all things considered, putting aside how much I've really enjoyed watching Gillespie in goals for us this season, how well I think he's done, I think the club's sensible approach would be looking to take offers on Mark Gillespie and hoping that Trevor Carson can, you know, get back to fitness and get back to the quality that he had before his DVT.
Yep, that's exactly it, I think, basically. Aye.
We wrap up the season with a home fixture against Livingston, a game where the stakes couldn't be higher. Motherwell win this game, they finish 8th. Motherwell draw this game, they'll finish 8th. And if Motherwell lose this game, they will also finish 8th. So it'll be tense. It'll be high octane. Fingernails will be chewed right down to the bone, I suspect. Seriously, though, a kind of an end of season affair. And you would expect just that, Jay. But in the same token, Stephen Robinson has given young guys some opportunities over the last couple of weeks. I don't think he'll be giving Jake Hasty another go, so there's another space in the bench, perhaps for another young guy to come on, make his first part debut, even if they're not quite ready or quite at the level as yet. We've already discussed the fact that many players will be on their way out. It will be a swan song, if you like, for some players. And the other sense of it, get the guys some first team experience, get them a feel of Fir Park and playing with men, playing at the highest level in Scottish football. And it may develop, and it may kind of, I'm not going to say it's going to put them on a fast lane to becoming professional footballers or becoming first team mainstays, but it will certainly help in their experience and their football wisdom further down the line.
No, I think you're spot on, and it's something that, you know, it's not anything radical. You know, I think we could all, you know, Motherwell fans of all different generations can probably rhyme off, or maybe not, you know, maybe it's more of a Joe McElvey thing, but you can always remember the names of these random youngsters who make an appearance at the end of the season. You know, your Martin Woods or your Kevin Gallagher, Kevin McDonald and guys, you know, who seem to kind of hang about in the fringes, then get a couple of games, one or two games at the end of the season, and then vanish off the radar forever. That's not to say that that would be the case tomorrow. Someone might come in and suddenly they're the next David Turnbull. But I think it's absolutely what you use those games for. Unfortunately, it's another game. I haven't been to just about every game this season. I've missed today, and I'm at a wedding on Saturday, so my season's already over, perhaps a little like the Motherwell defence. But it'll be interesting to see how we approach it, and it'll actually be interesting to see how Livingston approach it as well, because obviously we've dedicated a lot of this podcast to talking about Jake Hastie playing for Motherwell, having signed a pre-contract. It'll be interesting to see if Declan Gallagher starts the game. You know, he's obviously been a mainstay for Livingston all season, but they're now in a situation where, firstly, they need to be looking at next season. I don't know how good the Livingston Youth Academy is. I don't know who they've got in reserve for Halkett and Gallagher, but presumably they need to start thinking about replacements there. And of course, he's going to be up against the club that he's going to be playing for next season. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach it in terms of lineup as well. But yeah, I think a mix, you want a mix of, you know, if Cadden and guys like that are to move on, I still don't see any reason why they shouldn't be given, as you say, a swan song. There's obviously guys there as well who will be here next season that should be playing. And of course, if you've got spaces to throw in maybe the odd youngster, maybe give Jamie Semple a start. You know, why not? He's obviously came off the bench the last couple of games. Maybe now's a chance to give him a wee start. And then you go into the summer knowing that if he does make the breakthrough this season, you know, he's already got that under his belt. He's already got over the nerves, perhaps, of that first start. So I think as much as a fan, it's perhaps a meaningless game. It's, you're not playing for anything. It's essentially just a glamorised friendly. I think there is still, you know, it's still useful. It's still, you can still use it for some sort of positive. And it will just be interesting to see how we approach it and how Stephen Robinson approaches it, considering a lot's been made about the guys who are leaving, about the selection headache. So it'll be interesting to see how he overcomes that while still putting out an 11 that can hopefully, you know, try and battle for the points.
But it would obviously be good to finish on a high note. The season has been topsy-turvy at times. It's been difficult through the first half. The second half, we've had a complete transformation. Played some really good stuff, got some good results, and finished well clear of the relegation zone. The break is short. We've got, I reckon it's about 6 weeks between the last ball being kicked in the Scottish Premiership and then heading into the friendlies and then the Betfred group games. So it'll be a short turnaround. There'll be a lot of change of personnel. You do want to finish in a positive, and perhaps the previous season isn't really considered when you regroup for pre-season. But I guess the guys that will remain at the club would benefit from a winning end to the season. You don't want to be going into a new season even with the slightest memories of disappointments throughout the previous campaign.
Well, I suppose not, but as you say, I think you have your 6-7 weeks, whatever it is, off, and you come back afresh, and you know, you start again, basically. But it would be nice to go out on a high. You know, depending on where he is, I'd maybe like to see Trevor Carson at the weekend. As mentioned, Jamie Semple possibly start up front. Some of the guys who are, you know, maybe on the, some of the younger guys who are maybe on the verge of making the bench, maybe, you know, get them on the bench as well. See what we've got lined up for the future. I think an interesting one on the sort of youngsters is Adam Livingston, because Adam Livingston is 21, I think, and he's made about 5 appearances for us. I think he's had one loan spell out as well. Given the fact that he's the only natural left back, he's been the only constant natural left back at the club for the last couple of years from when he made his debut, and he's been nowhere near the team. I don't want to be harsh on the boy, but I don't actually see where he's going to go. I think he's got a year in his contract left, and if he's not even pushing for a place in the team next year, I don't know what's what. I don't want him to become basically the Bob Malcolm of left backs, where he's here until he's 24 and effectively played 7 times or whatever it was. So I'd maybe like to see Livingston, if Livingston's actually no injured, because again, I've not heard about him in months, to be honest with you. if he's you know, if he's available, I'd maybe like to see him sitting there playing at left back and see how he how he's developed for the last time I seen him, which was again maybe this time last season. But other than that, you know, there's it is a kind of small squad, so I don't suspect there'll be too many changes. There might be one or two people we won't see again, but you know, I think everybody will be hoping for 3 points anyway.
Yeah, I guess I was just trying to find a way to insinuate that it was a bit more important than the game possibly is, but I guess
it's not.
Yeah, you just really kind of, I think when we went into the split, we kind of thought the same, to be honest. You just want this season over and done with. We've already made steps to build the team up ahead of next season. Three players in. I'm sure Stephen Robinson and Keith Lasley will have their eye on and many more. Martin Foyle is meant to be somewhat relentless when it comes to his pursuit of finding players that fit our mould and model. So fingers crossed, we'll see a lot of movement there. Perhaps secure one or two of the guys that are out of contract and take it from there. A guy we didn't mention was Craig Tanner as well. We'll maybe fit that in at some point in next week's podcast. But I think that's pretty much all we've got for this week. Guys, thank you very much.
Can I just say that I was watching Sportscene as we did this, and I think their defender shouldered it off the line, and I also don't think it was a foul by Charles Dunn either. So,
and can I just say that if nobody or if anybody hasn't seen the film on the BBC iPlayer, I can't even remember what it's called now. The one about it's our club or whatever it is, the Motherwell one. It's all over Twitter. It's all over Facebook. If you've still not seen it, go watch it. And if you're still not a Well Society, get to the end of it and then join.
If you're still not a Well Society.
Still Well Society member. A convenient word missed out there. Aye, well spotted.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.
Jesus is just a Spanish boy's name. How come one man got so much fame? To any me, it's pointless to anybody that doesn't have faith. Give me the cloth and I'll wipe my face when it's all gone. Something hard is wrong, and it's not mine.